From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The filing deadline closed yesterday afternoon to run for local elected office in Juneau. There are no new challengers. Barring write-in candidates, all five incumbents seeking re-election to the Juneau Assembly and the Juneau Board of Education are unopposed. On the Assembly, that means Carol Treem, Greg Smith, and Wade Bryson are all headed into their second terms after the October election. On the school board, that's the same for Dede Sorensen. Emil Mackey is headed into his third term. Members of both bodies serve three-year terms. Troy White-Smith had filed a letter of intent to run for school board with a state commission, but he didn't make the certified candidate list by the deadline. In a text on Monday, White-Smith said, quote, "Things got messy at work today due to fog, and I wasn't able to get there in time." White-Smith works for Alaska Airlines. He says he will have to do a write-in campaign. He ran unsuccessfully for Juneau Assembly in 2021. For writing candidates to be valid, they must file paperwork by September 27th. Last year, Will Muldoon put together the first successful write-in campaign in a local election since 1992. Muldoon is now a member of the school board. Families enrolled in state-funded homeschool programs in Alaska can use their student funding allotments to pay for some private school classes. That's according to an opinion the State Department of Law released yesterday. Families enrolled in homeschool programs can spend public money on books, school supplies, tutoring, and classes. In her opinion, Deputy Attorney General Corey Mills said allotments can be used to pay for some private school classes, but not full-time tuition at a private or religious school.
The more it looks like you're just trying to send your kid to private school and get subsidized by the state, I think that's when you start getting into unconstitutional territory.
She said the goal of student funding allotments is to supplement public education, not to replace it with private school. Her opinion outlines what's likely constitutional and likely unconstitutional.
Things like private tutoring, public or private college courses, extracurricular classes or sports, certain educational materials that meet the requirements of the allotment program are all very likely constitutional, even if they may provide an incidental benefit to a private school.
Mills also emphasized that there's a lot of gray area when it comes to the constitutionality of allotment spending. She said it's up to individual school districts to work with the Department of Education and Early Development when questions arise.
Constitutional questions are often murky. We're trying to provide at least the absolute yeses, absolute noes, and then kind of what can you work, what framework can you work within in those gray areas. And ultimately, we just want to try to help school districts and the department best implement this program.
Opponents have argued that the allotment program violates part of the state constitution. The part in question says that public funds cannot directly benefit a religious or other private educational institution. But Mills said, on its face, the allotment program isn't unconstitutional. Alaska has the fastest rising opioid overdose rate in the nation, and Southeast Alaska has the state's second highest rate of overdose death. Village public safety officers are often the only first responders in the region's remote communities. There was a special training for them in Juneau last week. KTOO's Claire Strempel has the story.
Under the fluorescent lights of a classroom, Logan James Lee is pumping on the chest of a CPR dummy. He's a security officer for the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. He practices giving instructions to a bystander.
Can you please turn on AED?
Yeah.
And then go from there while talking on speaker with 911.
James Lee is sweating by the time he's done.
Yes, that was a workout, but I was nervous.
Then it's Michael Betts' turn.
Hey, man. Hey.
This time, he's told the dummy is overdosing on opioids.
He's not breathing. You don't see any chest rise and fall.
Betts kneels and gives the dummy a shake, then checks its pulse. He quickly unwraps a package of naloxone nasal spray, sticks it in the dummy's nose, and sprays.
Now you've got him, but he's swinging.
A trainer from the fire department prompts him.
Hey, calm down. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, so with these guys, you're always going to want to call 911. Once you administer that Narcan and it kicks in, they're going to go into immediate withdrawals.
Betts is a village public safety officer for the community of Heidelberg on Prince of Wales Island. He's the only first responder who lives in the community of about 400 people. State troopers are about 45 minutes away at best if he needs backup. He says he knows a lot of opioids are trafficked into and through Heidelberg, but he hasn't had to resuscitate a real person with naloxone yet.
Like, everybody probably has Narcan in their purse, in their glove box, somewhere in their house, in a drawer. A lot of times we don't even get called. We hear about it the next day.
Betts and eight other people came to Juneau to take part in an opioid overdose response course offered by the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska with funds from a federal grant. The role play here in a classroom is meant to prepare him and other VPSOs for an overdose situation where they're likely to be the first person on the scene.
If you look at a definition of first responder, that's what the VPSO is.
Jason Wilson runs the Public Safety Department for Central Council. He says VPSOs are more than just law enforcement.
They're also EMTs. They're also the ambulance driver. They're the fire chief, or they're a part of the fire department. They're a big part of the search and rescue within a community. They're animal control.
Central Council runs the VPSO program for the Southeast Alaska communities of Cake, Angoon, Pelican, Saxman, Heidelberg, Thorne Bay, and Kasan.
And the toolbox for our VPSOs and being able to respond to overdoses was really important to the tribe and in our communities.
They're not just learning how to treat a health emergency. They're also learning how to police narcotics. One of their instructors is Chris Questis, a former police detective and a national drug expert. He said Alaska is seeing a peak in opioids, especially fentanyl, and that the state has the same distribution patterns and the same underground market network of narcotics as he sees nationwide.
What the challenge is how do we minimize their influence in communities and villages in Alaska?
That's a challenge because these remote communities are small and have few law enforcement resources. But Questis says it's also a strength. He thinks the VPSO program is ahead of the national curve because individual officers have so many roles.
You are actually able to participate in some of the prevention and intervention and even the community education components to reduce some of the risk factors in the community.
He said that's the direction he expects a lot of law enforcement agencies in the lower 48 to take. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
In Petersburg, the chum salmon from several hatcheries have all come in at once to OBI Seafood's processing plant. Workers are averaging 17-hour shifts to keep up with a volume they say they've never seen before. KFSK's Catherine Monahan reports.
Everything is in motion at OBI Seafood. Forklifts and rubber-clad workers are bustling across the loading area. Inside, lines of workers are passing fish down long steel-topped counters, chopping and removing eggs as they go. They say they've never seen this much chum salmon at once.
Yes, this is like the chumpocalypse.
Marlene Garcia has been working at OBI for 10 years. Normally, the really big quantities of fish, and consequently the long work days, start in August with the pink salmon run. But this year, it's July.
Beach crew is doing 18 hours a day, so they're working hard, really hard. That's good. The work is here. We feel it. It's definitely here.
Two factors are making this year different, and they both have to do with how the processing plant interacts with hatcheries in the area. Hatcheries raise fish and release them into the wild. Pete Brontuis, the production manager at OBI, explains what they do when some of those fish come back to spawn.
They catch what they need for brood stock, which is the eggs that they need to produce next year's fish. And then everything that sits in front of those net pens is what we catch for cost recovery.
Cost recovery is the main way hatcheries fund their operations, by selling the rights to fish close to release sites where adult salmon return to spawn.
Before, different places were bidding on all these cost recovery contracts, and we were getting outbid when we were Icicle Seafoods. But now that Ocean Beauty and Icicle have joined together, we are aggressively bidding for these contracts. It's very nice.
So that's one reason this year is different. The plant has access to more hatchery fish than it did before Ocean Beauty and Icicle merged into OBI Seafoods in 2020. The other reason is that the three hatcheries the OBI contracted with this summer all had their chum salmon return at the same time.
It's a complete anomaly for me. It's just been constant shock at what's going on.
It's a cascade effect.
If the fish all show up at the hatcheries at the same time, then that means they all show up at OBI at the same time. And so instead of a steady, slow stream of chum, you get what Brantua shows me in the storage tanks.
Giant pile of fish.
Whoa!
It's your attention.
OBI hopes to process all its hatchery chum by the beginning of August. Meanwhile, the pink salmon are coming, and the coho behind them. Workers are expecting a long push, and some good money, through the summer. In Petersburg, I'm Catherine Monahan.
Wrangell's late summer festival, celebrating the height of bear season, comes out of hibernation this week. Bearfest kicks off tomorrow with an art workshop, a cub plunge kids swim session, a tree talk on the western black-headed budworm, and a bear symposium at the Nolan Center. The first Bearfest event, the art workshop, is scheduled for 10 a.m. tomorrow. Festival highlights are set to include two evenings of seminars on recent bear research, trinket storytelling, the annual Bearfest dinner and auction at the Stikine restaurant, pie and smoked salmon contests, a community market, and the Bearfest marathon, half marathon, and 5K races. Quick look at the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau area. Tonight, mostly cloudy, areas of fog, isolated rain showers, lows around 50. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, areas of fog, highs in the mid-60s. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, July 26, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.